Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Extra Point Podcast. I'm really glad you joined in. This is the third one for this week. As you know, we've been revisiting some applicational points that we made in Sunday's message from the text in Colossians 3. And this week, we're bringing an Extra Point Podcast every single day, each day focusing on one of those applicational statements. And so today, July 17th, we're looking at applicational statement number 3. My name's Todd. I'm one of the pastors, and I'm joined today by another one of our pastors, Brett, who handles all of our creative elements here at church. Brett, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, glad to be here.
I know you've been on before, and you and I are going to talk about applicational statement number 3. And of course, just to rehearse and review, this is really the point of the Extra Point Podcast, that we just kind of dig into some further application, deeper observation, additional even insight. And so we're doing that this week on a daily basis. Hope this is helpful. Brett, our applicational statement number 3 was simply this: we're to value spiritual security more than physical success. And just to make sure we're understanding what these are pointed at, we are aiming our applicational statements at the idea in Colossians 3, 1-4, that we're to set our minds on things above, seek those things which are above. And we talked about what that is in the message. Go back and hear that. But these are ways to actually try to live that out. Because I think you would agree, I think you would, that that's no doubt a great goal as a phrase, but people would ask the obvious question, what does it mean? How does it look to set your mind on things above? So we're just trying to bring some, you know, shoe leather action to that. And the one we're looking at is valuing spiritual security more than physical success. I'm going to throw this kind of to you like a real slow, fat pitch. Like, what's your first thought when you hear that phrase?
Physical success, for me, I've always thought of this, that idea, probably just as like ability to make and have a lot of money, or like wealth, physical wealth or material gain, things you have, money, things like that. That's kind of how I like, it's probably my first lens of interpretation.
It's what other people see, how they kind of, you know, stack you up, how they measure you. And that's not always bad in and of itself, is it? Like, success is not a bad word.
No, success isn't a bad word, I don't think. And I actually think that's kind of something that God has put in the hearts of men, is like that drive to succeed and do well. And I think that goes into a lot of areas, but I'm pretty sure there is a verse that says like, do well to watch out because sin is at your door. Like there is an aspect where God is like calling us to strive after success. What kind of success should you be striving after is the question. I think in 1 Timothy 6, it talks a lot about like what your heart desires, kind of what you're going after. It doesn't really ever call out successful people as wrong. And there's a lot of successful people in the Bible and all throughout history that God has greatly used. But what it calls out is the person whose main motivation is material gain.
Mm-hmm. And interestingly, in this text, and just so you'll know, those who are listening, with each of our applicational statements, we gave like a passage or a set of verses that you could read on that day. So today's passage is 1 Timothy 6, 5-10.
You care if I just read that real quick?
That's a great idea. Okay. Never get enough of the word, right?
Yeah. So I'm just going to read real quick 1 Timothy 6, 5-10.
And actually 5 is in the middle of a sentence. So if you want to go to like the middle of 5, beginning with the word who, it's kind of describing false teachers, but that's where it makes the most sense.
Okay. Beginning at the end of verse 5, 1 Timothy 6, who imagine that godliness is a way to material gain, but godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out. If we have food and clothing, we will be content with these. But those who want to be rich fall into temptation, a trap, and many foolish and harmful desires which plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, and by craving it, some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs.
And so from that, we are deriving what I think is one of the points, and that is that what we should value is spiritual security, that we are to be content with our food and clothing, and being godly as opposed to trying to make more and more money, like loving that. And then the end result of that is destruction, as he said. So a lot of folks think it's money, but he's not against money. He's against loving it.
Someone said to me when I was in college, you don't have to be rich to love money. Some of the people that I know that most love money are poor.
That's really helpful because we think only rich people are susceptible to this.
Yeah, and a lot of times the people I've met, the people that have experienced material success or they do have monetary wealth, they've kind of experienced the finality of understanding that money does not bring you what it says it will.
And perhaps the person on the other end who thinks, no, I'll be the exception. If I had it, I would be fulfilled.
Yeah.
They're still to learn that, right?
Yeah. Or that, you know, some people never get to experience that. And so if you don't have that experience, you might not learn through experience. You just have to trust what God's word says.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that this would be a true equation to you? And honestly, this is an honest question. If you don't think it is, it's not sin to say that. Like contentment equals the word we use in this applicational statement. Contentment equals spiritual security. Would that be a proper equation?
Yeah, I think that spiritual security and contentment kind of falls into that like idea of sovereignty. Like contentment really, I think, flows out of spiritually like how you see God. And if you have a strong view of like God's sovereignty over your life, then even at times where you feel like I just don't really see how maybe this is going to work out, even like monetarily, physically, a spiritual security in God's sovereignty over your life allows you to have a contentment. I feel like contentment more, I don't know if it equals spiritual security. Maybe spiritual security equals contentment.
Okay.
Because when you have that security of like what you know about God and what he says about you, and what he will do. Jeremiah says that he's watching over what he says to make sure that it happens. And when he says, you know, I'll never leave you, I'll never forsake you, I think those have more eternal meaning. But there are things that God tells us, you know, that he will do. And we see in Matthew, Jesus talks about, you know, look at the flowers and the birds and like, are they not taken care of? I think when you have that strong commitment and belief to God's sovereignty over your life, what flows out of that is just like a contentment with where he has you.
That's a good point that maybe they're both words within the circle of sovereignty, that they both exist together.
Yeah.
My dad used to say to me a lot when perhaps it was tight or when, and we by no means grew up rich, but we didn't grow up poor. I never thought about us being poor. As I got older, I did look back and talk to my mom and dad. I realized they had a lot tighter than I realized. But Dad would always say to us things like this, kids, we don't know all the things that God has kept from us that could have actually destroyed us. And so he said, instead of looking at all that maybe you didn't get or things that you wanted you don't see, think about all the things that you're not even aware of that didn't come your way, a terminal illness or the loss of a parent. And I wasn't debating then theologically all those things. I just remember thinking, that's a good way to look at it. Like God is taking care of us in ways that we don't even know about. So it's kind of like that security does breed some contentment. Yeah.
Yeah. In Ecclesiastes 5, it kind of talks about how it's good for people to enjoy their life, work, do what God has set before them, and kind of just accept in some sense, the lot that God has given them.
And I think that's the phrase in the verse.
Yeah. In some translations. Yeah.
Sure.
But yeah, which is kind of maybe in opposition to like striving for always to get more, which I think 1 Timothy talks about a lot about like what you're after. If you're after more of material success, I think it's pretty clear. He says some people have even fallen away from the faith because they're chasing this.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? In this text, they think the avenue to great gain is godliness. And Paul says the actual gain is godliness.
Yeah, and it's interesting, even in that sentence, the modifier that he gives. Like, godliness without contentment, would that be gain? Or is it like required?
I don't know if you could have godliness without contentment. because then it would probably be a selfish pursuit. You'd be using it to get your way.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. So I think that's just a good check. I feel like I'm getting that check a lot, like just even through social media and whatnot, when you see what other people are, you see their lots in life, you know, the way where God has them, their level of material success. And I think at times you can start to question, like, am I where I should be? Am I doing the right thing? Not that those questions are inherently bad, and sometimes those can lead to some good self-reflective work. But a lot of times for me, I know that is not necessarily healthy.
It's rooted in comparison unintentionally. You start thinking.
And I think the root of it is like, maybe I see someone who can do more or has more than I have, and I want that more.
Mm-hmm.
So the more that I want, I don't necessarily want more of the Lord. I'm wanting more trips, more things, more.
What they have.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. More, you know, I see, and it's a false assumption, but you see someone who maybe has financially more, and you just automatically connect that with, like, well, a greater peace of mind.
So is that a common temptation for folks at your stage? I mean, you're probably would be a typical first family. They may be a little older, maybe 38-ish, but you're 33, right?
Yeah.
Four kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you probably have a lot of the same. I suspect you have a lot of the pressure, like it's tight income at times, lots of needs, lots of expenses. Do you think that's common for most folks in that age to try to keep succeeding and then having to balance? Like, I don't want to chase it, but I do want to be successful because I got a lot of responsibility.
It's hard to judge like where everyone's at. And I think we have a just, there's in 2024, the family dynamic is so much, it just varies so much from family to family. You have a lot of two income families. You still have one income families. You have like, there's so many, even within like one faith family, you have a significant amount of
variety,
which maybe 50 years ago is less common. So you have more common pressure points. But I'll just speak for myself. I think that for single income families, I do think that, yeah, that can be a pressure point because, and even two income families too, just depending on your lifestyle and what you've become accustomed to or your expenses.
I think one thing that I've learned, whether it's right or wrong, it is probably a true reality, is that everyone thinks they have it tight. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, yeah.
And so no matter, like you said, dual income, single income, name your options, everyone feels it's tight.
Yeah, and I think that kind of gets to the heart of the verse, and that, like, I think towards the end of the passage, he's really talking about the idea of, like, if your desire is more material gain, even the people that leave and, you know, do all these horrible things in chasing after that, they don't actually achieve it. All it says at the end of the passage is that they have pierced themselves with many griefs. And so I think that's a good reminder that even, it doesn't matter your income situation, how many jobs you work, who works what, even really what your level of need is or where you're at in life. If that's what you're chasing, is that idea of like, I just need more. I need more money. I need more vacations. I need more toys, more. The richest people in the world still need more.
Mm-hmm. And the in pursuit of that is just a bunch of knives out, right?
Yeah.
They're coming after you.
There's stories throughout all of history where people reach the end of their life and they're
regretful.
So rich. But yeah, they have a ton of regret or they have a lot of personal pain. And
so as a listener, you can hear how a lot of what we've been talking about is a earthly bound perspective. And we encouraged Sunday to make sure you position your perspective vertically. And so we're saying value spiritual success, spiritual security, value what God thinks more than what you see on the earth or what you're comparing yourself to or what you chase after, like money and success. Two last questions. One is, in your own world and how you manage this, none of us do it perfectly, but I think of the two words that Paul used to describe people who are doing the same thing. He says that in Philippians, I think he says, do nothing out of selfish ambition. So it's not crucifying ambition, but selfish ambition. So it seems like the same kind of thing, chasing the wrong thing in the wrong way. How do you try to check that in your life? Like not afraid of success and ambition, but making sure you're not doing it from an earthly perspective.
I don't know where we heard this, but I would say probably 6 or 7 years ago, Meredith and I, our family was kind of at like a crossroads. The place where I was working, it had closed down, and we were like, what are we going to do here? And we just started saying to each other, and I think we were both feeling like, what are we going to do with our lives and all this stuff? And so we just kind of started saying to each other, everyone is building something. Everyone's working their whole life to build something. What are we building? And I think that was like a good check for our hearts that like, no matter where we work, we want to keep our eyes set on things above and make our main work for the kingdom of God, whether that's with our neighbors or at our workplace. And that was just always a good reminder, like, hey, what am I spending my life to build? And if the answer to that is like, well, I'm probably just spending my life to build my business. There's a pothole at the end of that road.
Or can we just put it in our terms, spending your life to build your church? Ministry, because I don't think there's anything necessarily more sacred.
No, I just meant at the time that we were talking about that, I wasn't working at the church.
Right.
I was just running my little small business. But yeah, even now, if I see it as like, I want to grow my ministry, I want to have a thing that's of X number of size because I think we just felt very strongly that if we get to the end of our life, even if we've made a ton of money, and we get to the end of our life and we spend our whole life building our little kingdom, we would regret that.
And that's really good advice. I love the way you put that. What am I building? That's something our listeners can take away and just kind of use that as a filter. And if what the answer to that question is for the listeners, pretty horizontal, it'd be a good time to maybe evaluate and adjust.
Yeah. And I think it was good for us to come to the realization that everyone's building something. There's no there's no one who's in this place where they're like, well, I'm still deciding. Because you are never in a place where you aren't making a choice on time or on finances. Like you have to make a choice. What am I going to do with the next minute? What am I going to do with the next week? And I'm not saying we're like the most amazing. We use every single moment of our day to get out there and witness. But it's just been like a really good question to ask ourselves and a convicting question at times when maybe those things have gotten out of line.
Yeah. So last question is this. Give some pointers or maybe even some personal examples of how to pursue spiritual security, like thought patterns, maybe family habits. You've got 4 kids. What are things you do? And we're not trying to set you up as a model or a perfect example, but yeah, you're in the same walk of life, struggles. Like what would help some young families in our church?
So number one, I would say minimize the amount of time on social media. It's harder when you are having to fight comparison all the time. So just put yourself in situations where you don't need to compare. And then when you, let's say maybe you hear about it, it's just easier to rejoice with those who rejoice. Second thing I would say is, and some people might think this is dumb, but we have made it a priority, not a priority, but we made it purposeful, like because our kids don't have concept of money. And so they'll all the time be like, oh, you can buy that. You know, whatever they see, they'll be like, Dad, you can buy that. Or we'll be somewhere and they'll be like, oh, we'll buy this. And so we felt like it was a good reflection to them of like priority to stop saying, oh, we don't have money for that. But what we've started saying is we're choosing not to use our money on that. And so just being intentional with how you communicate about what you monetarily specifically, and I think even with time, where you do choose to invest your time and your money. So making it intentional to say, hey, we're choosing not to spend our money on that.
You know, in fact, what you described is really just deleting victim language, because almost like we don't have the money, and portray almost like if we did, we'd probably do it, but we don't. It's not our fault.
Yeah.
That's really helpful to hear that, you know, don't embrace any kind of victim language. That's very helpful in the long run with your children.
Yeah. And also, we're in the top 1% of the 1% of the world. So also teaching them of like, we shouldn't be feeling bad for ourselves just because might not be able to, you know, buy the newest swimming inflatable for the backyard. And I don't want people to hear that I'm against, like, we do have an inflatable. Like, we bought, like, an inflatable swimming slide for the backyard last year. Like, I'm not against that at all. In college, my pastor said, it's not wrong to have things. It's wrong when things have you. And so that's kind of something that's always stuck in my mind is, like, if there's anything that I have to have, that's wrong.
This passage here says we should be content with food and clothing.
Yeah.
That's a pretty minimal category. It's a pretty minimal list of categories.
Yeah. It's a low bar.
Low bar.
Yeah. So, yeah, just kind of with our family and with me and my wife, we're probably the ones who struggle with it more. You know, 8-year-olds and 6-year-olds, they could have a couple blocks of wood and, you know, they're making things out of it. They're, I think it's the two of us that are probably more like, oh, I need this thing or it'd be really nice. So just a good reminder for us that if there's anything that we feel like we need, we have to have, then we've got that over godliness with contentment.
One thing I appreciate about you and Meredith and what you guys do is, I know last week you had to put those QR codes on the back of a lot of chairs. And so Saturday we ran into y'all, and then you were on your way up to the church and you had all the kids with you, and they were all going to help you put the QR codes on. And admittedly, not everyone actually put the code on. There were people who took the trash and they had different jobs. But I think that's a good way of saying to your kids visibly, like, hey, there's things that we're going to do that have a greater value than just always figuring out the next thing we're going to play or go to, like to watch and be entertained. And so they had a great time here. But I think you do that often, and you make, like you said, you're always building something. I think over time that pays off because your kids are experiencing, like, our family is involved in things that are beyond us or bigger than us or have a payoff for later. So I want to commend you for that. I think that's another thing you do well, to value spiritual security and not just trying to chase after a physical success. But I do love the way that you have a high ambition and you have a high bar for energy. And so I commend you for that as well. So thanks for leading our creative ministries and helping us really chase those well. It's interesting. We do a lot with social media at church, but you're not on it much, right?
Yeah, it is a tough catch 22 where I think more and more people of my age are coming to that realization that social media is very powerful, but like a lot of things that are very powerful, it's very powerful for good and very powerful for bad.
And that's so true about money.
It's true about money. It's true about everything. Water,
right.
You know, like, there's a lot of things. So figuring out a way, I think a lot of people are just coming into the realization of that because social media is so new. I kind of think about, like, when fire was first kind of like, when man kind of first got the ability, like, obviously fire has existed before man figured it out. But once humans got the ability to create and manipulate fire, how long did it take them to realize, like, oh, this is incredibly destructive? Even up until the 1800s, there were the fire codes. A lot of the Chicago fire happened because there was not really fire safety codes. And I feel like that a little bit with social media. It's relatively pretty new, and people are just coming in now to realizing, like, oh, this could be extremely destructive in my life. I better put some guards around my usage of it. So I think that's where I'm kind of at. But yes, you're right. And when you have to live in the world of using it, but maybe personally you don't engage with it, sometimes you can feel like, you know, you're out in left field a little bit.
Well, thanks for joining me today. I'm enjoying interviewing and talking to all of our team leads this week in our 5 Extra Point podcasts over these 5 applicational statements. And today's Wednesday. Brett, thanks for joining me today. And let's just, again, together, we want to encourage you as part of the FFC flock to value spiritual security more than physical success as a way to help you set your mind on things above and to seek those things which are above.
Thanks for listening to the Extra Point podcast. To find more content and resources to grow deeper in your relationship with Jesus, go online to firstfamily.church/resources.